Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
This Week in Health is sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Excited to have on the line Dr. Santina Wheat. She's the program director for the McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Northwestern Medicine, Del Nor Hospital. Dr. Wheat, welcome back to WGN.
Thank you. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm okay. I always think that's funny when you ask, you know, myself, and of course, I think the listeners are thinking that too. You ask, how are you today? Because it's not just a perfunctory, you know, how you doing? It's more like, really, how are you doing? Are you okay?
Always.
Well, some people out there that thought they wouldn't be able to get one of those, you know, let's say you collect, you know, rare and extinct diseases, they would have thought measles was out of range, right? That had expired or was no longer available. But apparently it's something that people need to worry about. Again, I know in the news earlier in the year, we had heard about whether it's outbreaks in, I think maybe Texas and maybe some other places, a disease that some doctors had never even seen, are seeing more and more of. And it's now something to take very seriously.
That's absolutely true. And we've even had a case of it in Illinois recently. And so it is something that we hadn't had for many years. And then in the past couple of years, we have seen an uptick in measles, especially as more people are choosing to not have the vaccination. We're seeing it come back. And so it's especially something to worry about if you are traveling to any of the places that have had outbreaks, or if there's anybody around you that has traveled to one of those places. And so it is something to look out for.
When the kids, we have three kids, and so they've had to have, just for school, to get into school and being allowed to participate in that, they've had to have a number of different vaccinations, and they usually get sort of combined into just a group of things that are known and accepted, that these are things you don't want and you don't want to give to other people. She should probably get that. When it comes to measles, just your thoughts on that. As people that may not be, and most people, you know, they get their advice and their, you know, information from medical professionals. And I think vaccinations, especially the measles vaccination, is pretty universal. I mean, not even pretty. It's universally accepted that it has helped. And obviously we're seeing, you know, issues when you don't get it. Just your thoughts on that. And then how often does that happen to you where people are saying, well, I heard vaccinations are bad for you. What should I do? How do you answer people?
Yeah, so this is a vaccine that standard here in the U.S. we give at about 1 year of age, and then again at 4 years of age, with a little bit of a caveat that if you're traveling, you can get the vaccine early. So I tell my patients that I treat them how I would treat my own children, and even my oldest has had an extra dose of the vaccine that protects against measles because we went traveling when she was young. And so that is how I talk about it with my patients. I wouldn't do something for you that I wouldn't do for my own family. And I do see more people that are saying that they're concerned about vaccines. They're concerned about what is in them. They're concerned about if it really does help. And the truth is, when we don't know that they're helping, when we see that people are very healthy, that means that they're doing their job. We really want to avoid these diseases. We want to avoid our children getting very sick. We want to avoid them being in the hospital or even dying. And so I do have real conversations with my patients about this one in particular. We have seen some deaths in the past year from measles and would really love to prevent that.
Yeah, I think to get the word out of that, this is truly something that you definitely want to avoid. I think measles, I don't know, just my perception of, when you think about it, you just think of it as, oh, okay, maybe it's along the lines of like a chicken pox kind of thing that a lot of kids in the past just all got. And that's how you got your immunity, was you had it. You know, you actually had chicken pox. But measles is very serious, right? It's one of those things that, can you share a little bit just about what it is that you get and then just how it can be so dangerous to certain age groups?
Sure. So measles starts very similar to any other cold or virus. It starts with respiratory symptoms. It starts with a fever, and then it often has a rash that covers the entire body. The problem with this is that last week we talked about encephalitis. Measles is one of the viruses that can cause encephalitis, particularly in the very young or those who are immunocompromised. But the problem with these viruses is, sure, many people won't get very sick, but you don't know who it's going to be that does get really sick. And so even someone who is otherwise healthy when they get the virus can be really impacted. And then I especially worry about those who are too young to get the vaccine. So I mentioned that you get it at one usually, but if you have a baby that's under 6 months, they're not eligible for it. And so we especially have to watch out for our youngest ones, and then even our adults who are immunocompromised.
So we kind of set the stage. You know, now if we've got measles is sort of back and you've got to kind of watch out for it when it was just part of history books and stories from the past. Are there any other ones that are that you're thinking, or you and maybe your colleagues in the medical field are thinking, okay, well, here's something we probably want to watch. Anything interesting, you know, like the bubonic plague, or I've heard polio, maybe that there's some things there to watch out for. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so the ones that we definitely know are rising, we definitely know that pertussis or the whooping cough, that one never really went away, but we have been seeing that one rise, which can also impact the very young and the very old, just like we talked about with measles. There are definitely concerns that we're starting to see polio rise as well. That one we know has some serious complications for people throughout their life and can impact their ability to get around. And the other one that people are really starting to talk about worrying about is meningitis. We are starting to see some meningitis again, and that can just have serious complications, especially even in healthy people. So it's not something that we can predict. And as vaccine rates go down, we are just seeing these diseases come back up.
No, I'm sure you'll keep listeners up to speed and apprised of what to watch out for, maybe some ways to approach and get in on some of the best practices as we go forward there. One of the cool things about March, I mean, everyone's excited about it. We're getting so many calls in and people walking around with their, you know, Go Kidneys t-shirts and some signs and things like that. It's National Kidney Month. You'd think that would be every month. Kidneys, you need them all the time, right? It's not just not just only in March, right? But your thoughts on National Kidney Month?
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity to raise awareness. There's a lot of diseases that impact the kidneys, and a lot of the diseases actually really happen fairly silently. And so it's a good time to think about, are you doing everything that you can to be healthy? Are you having a low-sodium diet? Are you making sure that your blood pressure is controlled? Those are two of the important things that we can do to protect our kidneys and make sure that we're living happy, healthy lives.
Yeah, they don't get a lot of publicity. I think the Visitor and Tourism Bureau for the Kidney needs to get on the job on the marketing side and kind of promote it, because it is a very important thing. Personally, we've got, so my brother-in-law's had two kidney transplants. Wow. And so he's had diabetes his entire life. And so over time, as you had mentioned as well, that's one of those things that damages it over time. And so then you can have to deal with it. And so he had to go on dialysis for extended periods of time, which by all accounts is really unpleasant. It's not a fun thing to do. And then he was able to get a transplant that lasted, I think, maybe about 5 years. And then he recently got another one. One of the things that I did not know that I'm sure a lot of the listeners were not, is that when they do the kidney transplant, they leave the old ones in. So when he ended up having an infection and a complication, they decided to go ahead and get the old ones out. I had no idea. I was shocked he had extra kidneys in there.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Taking the kidneys out can be a larger surgery than placing it in. And so it's true. Anybody that has a transplant usually has their previous one still there.
I mean, it's crazy because you have all these extra kidneys because you had to go ahead and get those taken out because there were some infections. And so the doctors thought maybe that was the right thing to do. On the other side of it, and this is something I'm personally having an issue with, is I have a kidney surgery on Friday. I've got a kidney surgery on Friday. Over the last few months, you know, some pain, like back pain, and then some blood in the urine, you know, but not stuff that you could necessarily see, but it came through on an annual exam, and then they did a few extra tests, and then they decided that's it. And so, which can be very serious. You know, there was a musician from the band Three Doors Down that, and like you said, it happens silently, that ended up having stage 4 cancer, had no idea. And then that was like his first diagnosis was, hey, you've got this, and it's probably, you know, about a year that you've got left to live. So I don't know how you can proactively get ahead of some of those things. Are there tests you can take? Mine, thankfully, is just a really giant kidney stone that's so big that it can't pass. So that's certainly unpleasant, but I guess positive considering the alternatives.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you have an answer and that there's a solution for that. The biggest thing that I really watch out for is is there protein or blood in your urine? And so if you ever notice that things look off or you notice that there's blood, then that's absolutely a reason to go in. And as you get older, particularly if you have high blood pressure, that's something that we watch for. And it's just a reason to ask questions at the doctor. It's not necessarily something we screen for as far as renal cell cancer goes, but it is definitely something that we look for when people have symptoms.
And so if there's any things, that, because it's combining, so we're going to combine some of the topics here. It is National Nutrition Month again. Dr. Wheat, I know that you and I would advocate that Nutrition Month should be every month, right? That you, it shouldn't just be, well, they do have dry January, right? And you have some certain times when you, so maybe you're even more nutrition conscious in the month of March. But so maybe if we can combine them, what are some good things to eat, drink, I guess, nutrition-wise that are also good for your kidneys?
Yeah, so I think about the DASH diet, which is a lot of fruits and vegetables. It's lower sodium, and it's really about having foods that are fresh and not prepackaged when you can avoid it. And obviously, we can't all avoid the things that are prepackaged, but when you are doing that, making sure that you're adding to it with the fresh foods, eating, like I said, fruits and vegetables really are the name of the game when you can add that in, and then making sure you're getting enough protein. So really just a balanced diet throughout.
Balanced diet without trying to keep your blood pressure down, keep your salt mm-hmm. intake down. Those are some of the things. And okay, so last thing before we let you go, people always say, they text in, they're like, what's Dr. Wheat really like, right? What does she do? And since we're talking about spring break and travel, you mentioned that you had kids. Do you have like a healthy destination, right? You wouldn't go someplace that was next to maybe a nuclear waste dump or someplace that would be not healthy, right? Even if it was interesting. Like, where does Dr. Wheat, where are you thinking of going? Now, of course, we're in March. You're thinking of maybe it's going to be a little bit nicer. Where do you go?
Yeah, we do have a spring break coming up. We are planning a trip to Mexico City. We like to explore cities and see the different museums. So that's our plan in a couple of weeks.
All right. And we don't want to pry too much because we don't want, you know, all your fans to follow you to Mexico City. I think you're probably safe with that. Before we let you go, if you want to give information out or people to follow you, maybe social media wise or get a hold of all the great things happening at Northwestern.
Yeah, to find out at Northwestern, www.nm.org is Northwestern Medicine. And people can find me at my name on all of the social media places, but I go by Dr. Tina Wheat in most places.
Dr. Tina Wheat, thanks so much for everything you're doing. We appreciate it. Always great to share some of those health either tips or things that are happening, the trends, certainly some of these great days. Thanks for jumping on the show today.
Thanks. Have a great week.